Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back. It's Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Many school districts in Massachusetts are facing what observers call a crisis. As WBUR Edify reporter Tanya Mosley reports, there just aren't enough qualified superintendents to fill all the openings.
Good evening. I'd like to call our meeting to order.
It's spring, and the Peabody School Committee is about to interview another candidate for superintendent. The committee is looking for stability. The district has gone through four leaders in 10 years. But finding a qualified candidate has not been easy. Two of the six final candidates have already been snatched up by other districts. And just before this meeting in early April, Mayor Edward Betancourt has this disappointing news.
I did get a phone call yesterday from John O'Terry notifying me that he had been offered and he had accepted the Malden superintendent position Monday evening.
It's almost like free agency in baseball.
Peabody School Committee member Joe Amico.
You better give them a great offer when you do decide on who you want. And we didn't even get to that process. We only got through the initial interviews.
The Peabody District is far from alone in the challenge to find a qualified superintendent.
We have been watching somewhere in the vicinity of 55 to 65 superintendents turning over every year for the past 10, 12 years.
Tom Scott is executive director of the Massachusetts Association of School Superintendents. Scott says today, you can expect a top school leader in Massachusetts to stay with a district about 5 to 7 years.
If you're in a district for 10 plus years, you've been in there for a long time.
Back when Scott was a superintendent in the late 90s, he says the average was 15 years. A change in the state pension system has led to many superintendents retiring earlier than they used to. And across the country, experts say the pool of candidates for these difficult jobs is declining. Scott's organization helps districts find potential candidates, and he says a decade ago, a superintendent job could garner 75 to 100 applications. Today, a posting might get about 30. Then there is the issue of scrutiny. Scott says, with increased budget constraints, school communities are less likely to be forgiving when they believe a superintendent has made a wrong decision.
You know, the way I describe it is the position has been so more politicized than it should be. Schools are a microcosm of society. We deal with many social issues that take place today. Our expenditure is the largest expenditure of most communities. So all of those factors weigh into the decisions that superintendents make.
Those important decisions, Diane Kelly knows all too well, and she enjoys making them. As the top leader of the Revere School District, her days and nights are consumed by her job.
Do you do this often, where you're eating at your desk?
Every day.
Every day?
Yes.
No lunch break for you?
Each day, Kelly is in the office by 7 a.m. Most days are dominated by meetings with parents and staff. By 4 p.m.?
That's when I say, now I can do my work.
That's when Kelly begins her second leg of the day, writing policy and proposals or figuring out budgets. Then there are those evening events like committee and school meetings.
And I get home at about 8:30 or 9, and then it's eat something completely unhealthy that I can call dinner and take care of email from there and usually wrap it up, you know, about 10:30 or 11.
Despite the demanding schedule, Kelly loves it. And she was groomed for it by her old boss, former Superintendent Paul Dakin. She believes Dakin was contemplative in choosing her as the assistant superintendent during his tenure. In 20 years, there have only been three superintendents in Revere.
The important piece of that kind of continuity within the superintendency is that there's continuity in the values and the belief system of the school district.
One way to attract more candidates might be identifying and grooming them earlier, says Scott. He believes that could go a long way in helping to solve the shortage.
But we need to do more outreach. We don't tap. I call it tapping. You know, you approach someone, you say, you know, I think you really have these qualities. I would really encourage you to advance yourself in the direction of principal or superintendent of schools.
Back in Peabody, school committee member Joe Amico finds inspiration in Revere's ability to hire and retain superintendents.
I'd love to see that happen in Peabody, where you have someone long-term, because stability is good for students, it's good for parents, and of course it's good for teachers as well.
The committee has found a temporary solution. Instead of hiring a new superintendent, it has persuaded retired leader Herbert Levine to serve as interim head for another year. Amico says the Peabody School District will start a new search in the fall with the hope that lessons learned from previous searches will lead to the perfect candidate.
That report from WBUR Edify reporter Tanya Mosley. Well, it is finally time for sports with Bill Littlefield, host of NPR's Only a Game. Hi there, Bill.
Hey, Magna.
We saved the best for last today, okay?
Oh, I appreciate that.
Well, the Celtics are set to take on the Cleveland Cavaliers tonight at the Garden in Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals. But first, let's talk about another number one thing that the Celtics have, which is the number one draft pick. How'd that happen?
It's kind of thing one and thing two.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember those days. That happened because back in 2013, the Celtics made a trade with the Nets. The Celtics sent Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce to the Nets, and the Nets sent a whole bunch of future draft choices to the Celtics. And boy, have the Celtics come out the winner on that particular exchange.
Yeah.
The Nets, of course, were trying to build an instant winner, and the Celtics went for youth and patience, and sure looks like they came out on top.
Well, Paul Pierce actually sent out a funny tweet last night taking credit for it, for the luck. He said it was his parting gift to the Celtics.
Yeah, very nice. Thank you, Paul.
But of course, so they've got a pick, right? They've got the number one choice. I mean,
exactly.
Who do you think they're looking at?
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say it doesn't matter who they're looking at, because I don't think they're going to exercise that pick as a pick. I think what they're going to do is wait and see what other teams are willing to give up in order to get that pick. The Celtics will get perhaps somebody who's an established top flight player now and trade the pick to a team that's trying to rebuild.
I see.
That's my guess, and it's only a guess.
Okay.
Because so far what Wick Grosbeck has said can be interpreted either way. He said at one point after they got the number one pick, he said, "I wish the draft was tonight. We could get some help for the series against Cleveland." But then a little later on the same occasion, he said, "It's very likely that we will just have to wait and see how this all turns out, depending on what other teams offer us for the number one pick." And I think the latter estimation of circumstances is probably the more accurate.
Okay, so but what about some of the stars coming out of college hoops, right? Like UCLA's Lonzo Ball?
I laugh because he comes with so much baggage, including trying to sell a $500 sneaker.
His dad's $500 sneaker.
Yeah, I know, but his dad would have nothing if he didn't have all these accomplished basketball-playing sons. Some people think that this is wonderful because it's stealing the thunder of gigantic corporations like Nike. And some people think it's just ridiculous because $500 for a sneaker is inherently ridiculous.
I was just going to check under the table because I can't see your feet there.
You're not going to find any $500 sneakers. No, I'm one of those people who understands that wearing the shoe of an NBA player does not necessarily make you strong, young, and tall.
Yes. Sadly, neither.
No,
none of those things
happen,
are
so,
we.
No,
yeah.
You know.
Okay. So let's talk about the actual game tonight between the Celtics and the Cleveland Cavaliers, game one at the Garden. Here's Isaiah Thomas talking about what they've got to do.
Everybody on that team is playing at a high level, so it's going to be tough, but we're here and we're ready.
But here's the thing, Bill. The Cavs are even more ready, right? They haven't even played in a week.
Yeah. This is one of those things that you can look at either way. I mean, LeBron James is on the record as saying he doesn't like long delays. And I guess the theory there is that your team gets a little bit stale, a little bit rusty, failing to, you know, have a competitive opportunity every few days. My feeling is that at this point in the NBA season, every player is likely to be so beaten up that a few days off, 7, 8, 9 days off, is a blessing. And the Cavaliers are going to have an enormous advantage because they're going to come into this series rested and healthy. And the Celtics are coming into this series having had to really battle through a 7-game series and a very tight 7th game to get here. And so they're going to be okay. And the other side of the equation is, oh, they're riding that momentum of, you know, getting the 7-game, the win in the 7th game, and they're going to go right into Cleveland, right into the series against Cleveland and beat them. This is why they play the games and why people watch them, to see which is going to happen. But I would have to say the rest at this particular point would be a fairly substantial advantage.
Well, since we're talking about basketball, there's one last thing I have to ask you about, and that's the fact that you had the chance recently to sit down with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. We stole a little tape from your studio, and I just want to play it. Here's Kareem talking to you.
Here you have two people that are very unlike on the surface, but we ended up being kindred spirits.
Just got a couple seconds, Bill. What's he talking
about? He's talking about John Wooden, of course, who coached him at UCLA. And his most recent book is about a long friendship that he had with John Wooden. And it's a great read, and I hope people will enjoy Kareem's presence on our program on Saturday.
I can't wait. Bill Littlefield is host of NPR's Only a Game. You can hear it, as Bill said, every Saturday on WBUR at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. and on Wednesdays right here at Radio Boston. Bill, thanks as always.
Thank you, Meghna.
That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.